Welcome to the Early Music Show. I'm at the National Gallery in London today to see a fascinating new exhibition that's just opened this week. It's called Vermeer and Music, and it focuses on 17th century Dutch paintings by Vermeer and by his contemporaries, all of which portray musical themes. And the music we're going to hear throughout the programme I've specially chosen to complement some of these images. And you can see some of the paintings we're talking about on the Early Music page of the Radio 3 website. Now, this was a period known as the Dutch Golden Age, and it does remind us just how much music really was part of everyday life at that time. Just looking around, I can see images of lively tavern scenes. There are small, informal groups of players and slightly solitary figures as well, playing or standing behind their instruments in their own homes often, some looking rather wistful, others apparently mid-performance. And what's particularly interesting to me is the way their instruments are painted. And the gallery has in fact included several real instruments of the time in glass cases, so we can see just how very accurately they're portrayed in the paintings. Now, Vermeer, of course, is well represented, and I'm standing in front of what's perhaps one of his most famous musical paintings, The Guitar Player, of around 1672. In fact, it's the image which is on all the exhibition posters. Rather pretty young woman dressed in a yellow jacket edged with white fur. I think it's some sort of ermine. Tight ringlets in her hair almost seem to be moving as she tilts her head and sways as she plucks the strings. Like so many of the paintings I'll be looking at, this does feel very much like a domestic scene. She seems to be performing just for her own pleasure. But there is so much more going on in all these paintings, and I'm delighted to be joined here at the gallery by the exhibition's curator, Marjorie, or Betsy Weisman. Thank you so much for coming, Marjorie. Now, we've moved on from The Guitar Player, and this is a rather tiny painting. It's one I'm certainly familiar with. Can you tell us a little about it? First of all, who the painter is?
This is a beautiful painting by Gerrit Dou. It comes from the Dulwich Picture Gallery. It is an absolute gem of a picture. We see a woman seated playing a clavichord.
It's a really lovely looking instrument, very tiny, almost like a laptop. And I think before we talk any further about this painting, let's hear some music played on perhaps what might be a similar clavichord. It's by the very celebrated Dutch composer Jan Petersen Sveelinck, who was the organist at Amsterdam's Old Church for some 44 years.
Thank you.
Mein junges Leben hat ein End, a piece by Holland's greatest composer of the 17th century, Jan Petersen Sveling, performed there on the clavichord by Siegbert Ramper. So, Betsy, let's have a closer look now at this lovely little miniature. Am I right to call it a miniature painting?
It is a tiny picture and painted with such exquisite detail. When you look more closely at it, you can see the book of tablature on the table behind the viola that leans against the table. There's even a recorder tucked underneath. So a lot of musical references in the painting. What I love about it is the fact that she's playing a clavichord, which is the quietest of the keyboard instruments. And I think that's one of the tricks that the artist uses to draw us into the painting and make it a more intimate experience in viewing it.
You get a sense that the young girl sitting at the clavichord has been slightly surprised. There's a lovely bit of drapery, a curtain pulled back, and she's looking out to the painter or the camera, we might say, rather than at her music.
Well, I think she's looking at us, the viewer, saying, oh, you've wandered into my room. Well, why don't you come a little closer? And if you want to make yourself useful, pick up the viola and play. Let's have a duet.
Such an intimate moment, in a way. Here's a girl caught, perhaps practicing in her own room. Why do you think it was that so many of the Dutch painters of this period featured not only music, but this kind of intimacy of a domestic setup?
I think because of its visual appeal, there's also, in so many of these paintings, a hint of the erotic, you know, nothing overt, but it's meant to be a little bit titillating and inviting and really just draw you into it. And also the artist, an artist such as Vermeer or Gerrit Dou, the way in which they paint the pictures, their recreation of all the tactile surfaces within the painting makes you want to come closer and have a more intimate engagement with the painting and with the young woman within it.
Well, we've moved on now to another painting. In fact, two of them placed on the wall, one above the other. And this time, Betsy, rather than some lone, thoughtful young woman, we have a bit of a crowd, don't we? Both of these pictures contain little scenes of several figures making music together.
These are just delightful musical companies. They're quite small, and we see the figures in a rather neutral background. So we aren't exactly sure where these scenes are taking place, whether they're in a tavern scene or in a private home. What's also interesting to me is, some people are playing instruments, some people are singing. It's such a nice, convivial atmosphere. In the one painting by Jacob van Velsen, we see a trio in the center of a woman and a man sharing a music book, and the woman is keeping time, and then there's another young man playing a violin. What's also interesting is that there might be some sort of suggestion that this is representative of the five senses, or perhaps the woman keeping time symbolizes moderation and temperance.
What's interesting to me, of course, is the way the fiddle player is holding the instrument just on sort of just below the shoulder, almost on the top of the chest, which is the way not only that Baroque fiddles of this sort of period tended to be held a little lower rather than gripped with the chin, but particularly perhaps a dance fiddler, a fiddler of popular music, as I guess this chap is.
Exactly so. What was pointed out to me by a violin player is the fact that his bow is quite short, which would have been something used for fiddling as opposed to violin playing.
Exactly. And let's have a look at the painting below. They're both called A Musical Party, but this is by a different painter, isn't it?
This is by Jan Olis. What is interesting and unusual about this, we see a group of young people, very attractive young people, gathered around a table. And quite unusually, we see a young woman playing a viola da gamba. It's unusual in that it was thought quite indecorous for the woman to play a viola da gamba because it's clasped between her legs.
And I must say, she doesn't look particularly graceful doing it.
No, she doesn't. I have to admit that.
This particular woman, not a great beauty. All the men around have got wonderful hats with huge brims, and one is a lutenist, and we've got a flautist on the right there. And there's some music on the floor. And I know there are some people who actually go around these old paintings trying to enlarge, sort of look very closely at some of these pages you see painted to see if they can actually identify them. Has anyone done that?
No, and I've tried. But I think in so many of these paintings, the music is intentionally just not identifiable.
Just out of sight.
Almost, but not quite. And I think that that's intentional on the part of the painter to make you believe that perhaps it's your favorite piece of music that they're about to play.
So we can't really know exactly what music these characters might be playing, but it's time for some music. So let's hear a piece by Nicolas Akempis, who was cathedral organist in Brussels in the mid-17th century. He composed some 98 short instrumental symphonies, and we're going to hear one of them now, performed by the Newbury Consort.
Thank you.
Symphonia in D major by the Brussels organist composer Nicholas Akepis and performed there by the Newbury Consort. Well, Betsy, if the two paintings we've just been looking at showed a group of friends or amateurs perhaps playing together, this one that we're standing in front of now has a much more professional approach to music making, doesn't it?
It does. This is a painting by Hendrik Terbruggen that I think is quite different to a lot of the small gems of paintings we've been looking at previously. This is a rather large work, life-size, and the musician in it, as you said, is probably a professional musician. The reason that we know that or can imagine that is in part because of his dress. He's wearing this wonderfully flamboyant dress with these billowing draperies and striped sleeves. And I love his hat, this sort of poofy beret with these fabulous feathers curling around. And he's absolutely joyous in making music. You just have the sense that he is belting out a tune.
He has got quite a red nose. Do you think he's been plied with drinks to keep him going?
Very possibly so. The lute that he's playing is very specifically rendered, and we can see that the front of it, the soundboard, has a bit of a concave look to it, possibly because of the tension of the strings. Perhaps it's an older instrument, as you know, a professional musician might have.
Yes, the lute is, you know, really shown in amazing detail. I mean, I guess one could even tell what chord he was playing at that moment. We can see each of the 10 strings and the tuning pegs. I know from various instrument makers today that I've worked with, such clear images of these instruments in paintings are really useful to them because they can actually make copies in the way that so few instruments are left today that are in good enough condition very often.
Right. And what's been interesting to me in putting the exhibition together is consulting with instrument builders and curators of historic instrument collections to see which instruments are in their original state, which have been modified, and how those relate to the paintings. Are the paintings accurate or not? And I think it varies from artist to artist. Some were much more precise and detailed than others. There are some artists who just sort of inserted a musical instrument for pictorial effect, not for any sense of accuracy.
Well, I think in honor of this enthusiastic professional, I should say, or hardworking, certainly, let's hear a piece for the lute now, again, by a contemporary of the artist. It's a piece by the lutenist Joachim van den Hover, whom, by the way, numbered amongst his pupils the two young princes of Orange, no less. Let's hear, though, one of today's most distinguished players, the American lutenist Paul Odet, with Fantasia Resonans. Thank you. Lutenist Paul Odet with Fantasia Resonans by the Flemish-Dutch composer Joachim van den Hove. You're listening to The Early Music Show here on BBC Radio 3 with me, Lucy Skeeping, and I'm at the National Gallery today with Betsy Wiesman, the curator of the new exhibition of 17th century Dutch paintings that portray musical scenes. And this may not be television, but you can actually see them on the Early Music Show page of the Radio 3 website. So have a look at that. Now, Betsy, although the title of the exhibition is in fact Vermeer and Music, as we've already seen, there are lots of other artists represented from this wonderful Dutch Golden Age. But so far, we've only seen sort of unidentifiable people, I suppose you could say. Now, though, we're standing in front of a painting of a real man. Can you tell us who he is? Because he's quite a distinguished character, isn't he?
This is a portrait by Thomas de Keyser of Constantijn Huygens. Huygens was really the epitome of the Renaissance man in the 17th century in the Netherlands. He was secretary to the stadtholders or governors of the Netherlands, and he was, among many things, a passionate amateur musician. He was a voluminous correspondent, and I would say that the majority of his letters managed to work in musical topics in one way or another. We see him here in absolutely elegant attire, seated, receiving a letter from his clerk. On the table next to him, this table covered with a wonderful carpet, we see an assortment of objects that allude to all of his different interests, books and architectural plans and globes, but we also see an arch lute. Or rather, we see part of an arch lute because it really extends beyond his arm and we can't really see it. Huygens could play many different instruments. We know a little bit from his autobiography that he started learning music at about age 5 and kept picking up another instrument and learning that. And even as an old man, he learned to play the guitar, which was newly fashionable in the Netherlands. Huygens is a bit of a leitmotif throughout the exhibition because he wrote a lot about music, and we know that he had a collection of musical instruments and musical scores and manuscripts. I think he would have been a professional musician if that had been an appropriate career path.
Well, the arch lute that we see on his lovely table there in the painting, it's not quite so rare these days. You see them quite a lot sort of poking up from orchestra pits in baroque operas and things. And one of my old early music mates from my old Royal College days is Christopher Wilson, who I know plays the theorbo or the arch lute. And we're going to hear him with the soprano Julia Gooding. And better still, they're actually performing music written by Huygens. Thank you. The soprano Julia Gooding with Christopher Wilson on the theorbo with Morte Dolce, followed by Caccia Amorosa by Constantine Haukens, an important mover and shaker in 17th century Holland, a diplomat who received knighthood for his work, no less, from James I of England, and of course a keen musician whose portrait I've been looking at here at the National Gallery in London. Well, we've moved on now to a really tiny little painting. I'm actually having to get quite close to see into it. It's somebody selling instruments, from what I can tell, and it's almost got a kind of fisheye lens feel to it.
This is a curious painting. It's by Carl Fabricius, who was a colleague in Delft of Vermeer's. It is originally intended to be a perspective piece, probably curved in a concave curved at the back of a viewing device. And when you curve this piece, the perspective falls into place. So it would have been a very illusionistic view of the city street with the new kerk, the new church in Delft in the background, and this instrument seller who set up his stall right in the foreground.
It's not very busy. In fact, there's nobody passing at all. But he's got a lute sort of leaning up against a rather scruffy-looking wall and a violin which is really coming at you out of the picture. You can see the bridge so beautifully.
Yeah, it's absolutely lovely. And, you know, that perspective would have been even more intense at the back of that perspective viewing device.
It gives us a sense of perhaps how music might have sounded out of doors. And, of course, in the 17th century, there was a lot of music, both in the tavern and in the streets, particularly the popular tunes. So for our next music, I've chosen a piece by Van Eyck, because he used to apparently play his recorder outside in the street. And I can imagine that kind of sound would go rather well with this picture.
Thank you.
Ah, that was a lovely tune. The tune known in England as Daphne. And that was a setting of it by Jacob van Eyck, a specialist recorder player and one of the best known musicians in the Netherlands in the 17th century. And the player there was Eric Bosgraaf on the recorder. Well, we've moved on now in this exhibition to another painting, and this time it's a still life. So there are no humans, no one actually playing an instrument, but it's a marvellous assortment of objects on what looks like a stone shelf. Betsy, tell us a little about it.
This is a Vanitas still life by Jan Trek, painted in the middle of the 17th century. Now, we've seen paintings in which music has been given symbolic meanings, whether it's as the sense of hearing or whether as a symbol for harmony. But in still life paintings, music is most often incorporated as an emblem of transience, of ephemerality, because, of course, before the age of recorded music, music existed only in the moment of its playing. And we see several musical elements here together with elements that represent death. For example, there's a skull wreathed with some grasses. We see a pipe with its coals knocked out. And the musical elements, we see a violin in the background and the bow tucked under an hourglass. There's a recorder, and there's also a book of tablature laid open. And on top of that is a shell and a reed used for blowing soap bubbles. And soap bubbles were a reminder that our lives are as fragile as a soap bubble.
I think we should keep this rather contemplative mood going for a little longer. Based on the piece by the English lutenist John Dowland, the composer Johann Schopp produced his own sort of calm and thoughtful setting of a piece known as the Lacrimae. This is a pavan, and it's played here by violinist Annegret Seidel and Hubert Hoffmann on the theorbo.
Thank you.
The Lacrimae Pavan by Johann Schopp, Anna Gretz-Seidel, the violinist, with the oboe player Hubert Hoffmann. Oh, well, we're running out of time, I'm afraid, but I must say, Betsy, you've done an amazing job putting together all these paintings and bringing them to this one themed exhibition. And I must say, it's especially interesting for early musicians like myself, because not only can we see close up in these paintings some of the instruments that people might only know from far off on the concert platform, but we also see the kind of real people who played them, dressed in their 17th century finery. And they do give us a great sense of the music too. So to inspire our final piece, we're now standing in front of two of, I guess, the most famous paintings in the exhibition. They're both by Vermeer, aren't they? And they're both on the same subjects.
Right. These are two paintings from the National Gallery, both depicting women playing a virginal. Now, they're often thought of as pendants, that they were painted by the artist, designed to be hung together specifically. But I think they're more variations on a theme. I think Vermeer, throughout his career, was so interested in music and the different artistic possibilities that depictions of music might present, that he could take a woman playing a virginal and just interpret it in so many different ways. For example, we see a woman standing and a woman seated, a woman depicted in clear daylight, and a woman illuminated by the sort of warmer, more somber glow, perhaps of candlelight. There's such a contrast between these two depictions of what's essentially the same subject.
It's interesting that one of them is playing standing. Do you think that's an artifice, a sort of pose, or do you think she might have been standing like that and playing, or is she posing for the artist?
Well, because virginals are essentially just the box, the business part of the keyboard instrument, you could have a stand at any height that you desired. And if you were shorter or taller or felt more comfortable seated or standing, you could have whatever stand you wanted.
There's a lot of symbolism, I guess, behind this lady standing at the virginals. Was a little Cupid up there. Would that, again, as we heard at the beginning of the program, sort of suggest beauty and eligibility for marriage?
Yes. In fact, each of these paintings have a painting in the background that clues us in a little bit to what the painting might be about. The woman standing at the virginal, as you said, has this Cupid that relates to a contemporary emblem or a motto that talks how the love of one is very honorable and, you know, to be preferred over multiple lovers, essentially. And in the other painting of the woman seated, illuminated by candlelight, a sort of dusky interior, the painting in the background is of a prostitute and her client. So it's a case of love for sale, and the prostitute is playing a lute. So it's a musical subject that links to what we see in the foreground of the picture.
Yeah, such an interesting sort of combination of these rather straight-laced and rather serious-looking young ladies with all that fun and games going on behind them on the wall. It's rather amazing. Well, look, Betsy, many thanks for your time and giving us a bit of a private tour of the exhibition that you've curated, Vermeer and Music, Love and Leisure in the Dutch Golden Age, it's called, and it runs at the National Gallery in London. Well, we're going to end today's early music show with music for the virginals by a Dutch composer we've already heard from today, Jan Petersen Svelink.
Thank you. Variations on the song Ik voor al over Rijn by Jan Peters van Swelink, played on the virginals by Ton Koopman, ending today's edition of the Early Music Show, which has been visiting the National Gallery's recently opened exhibition Vermeer and Music. It was presented by Lucy Skeeping in conversation with the exhibition's curator, Marjorie E. Weisman. And just to remind you, the paintings they were discussing can all be seen on the Early Music Show page of the Radio 3 website. Just before our Sunday concert at 2 o'clock, which features music by Benjamin Britten, let's hear a short piece by Britten's teacher, Frank Bridge. That was the romance from the second set of miniatures for violin, cello and piano by Frank Bridge. The performers were Jack Liebeck, violin, Alexander Chosen, cello and Ashley Wass, piano. And now the Sunday concert, recorded recently at Snape Maltings and introduced by Louise Fryer.
Today's concert sees the culmination of the 66th Aldbrough Festival with Mark Elder and the Halle performing one of Britain's best-loved works, his Variations and Fugue on a theme of Purcell, otherwise known as The Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra. The concert opens with two more Britten works, the Pardesis from The Prince of the Pagodas and his song cycle of 1936, Our Hunting Fathers, Emma Bell, the soloist. As well as paying tribute to the festival's founder, the concert also acknowledges Britain's eagerness to promote new music with the world premiere of a tribute, Über die Linie 8, by Wolfgang Riem. And the concert is dedicated to the memory of Peter Bohring, CBE, who in the 1970s and 80s played a key role in the Aldbrough Festival Snape Maltings Foundation. Britain's known for his operas rather than his ballets. He wrote just one, The Prince of the Pagodas, created for the Royal Ballet in 1957. The story loosely weaves together King Lear, the Sleeping Beauty and the Frog Prince, translated to a Far Eastern setting. Britten and Piers had visited Bali the year before, and as Piers wrote in his diary, one could hardly have spent those 3 days more blissfully, lazing, bathing, sleeping and going to listen to music. As Ben was announced as being engaged in making a study of Balinese music, we were all set for a course of intensive music listening. The evening of Friday, our second day, we heard no less than four different sorts of Balinese music and four different orchestras. Britten introduces the sounds of the gamelan to his ballet score, and it's very much in evidence in the Pardesis from Act 3, so it won't surprise you to hear there's lots of percussion squeezed onto the platform here at Snape Maltings. The story centres on an emperor who chooses his nasty older daughter over his lovely younger daughter as his heir. Magical flying frogs whisk the younger daughter off to the land of the pagodas, and she meets the prince, who's disguised as a salamander. Together they return and defeat her older sister, so it all ends happily. The leader of the Halle is Lynn Fletcher, and here to conduct them comes Sir Mark Elder for the Pardesis from The Prince of the Pagodas by Benjamin Britten.